Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. And welcome back to Habs Unfiltered, episode 393. I'm your host, Blaine Putney, and I'm joined by my co-host, Treg Wilson. We come to you live and in person from Snowmageddon, Nova Scotia. As we record, it's snowing.
Going back to our Gorniak.
Oh.
Jack Gorniak.
Well, there we go.
We'll leave people in suspense with that. They're like, Gorniak, what's going on?
The breeze about random shit. That's all it is. So it's Sunday night, 8 p.m. as we record. And Nova Scotia is now bracing for more snow. I feel bad for friends up in Cape Breton because they're really suffering through basically worse than White Wan.
Yeah, so we're getting... I think they're saying when it's all said and done tomorrow morning at around 5 or 6, we're getting 60 centimeters here in the Halifax, our area, and Cape Breton's going to be 80 and above, I guess, on the eastern side of Cape Breton.
Yeah, but still, that's bad.
Yeah.
So good luck to them. I've been shoveling all day for the last 2 days. That's my workout. I saw you found a gym.
The most ghettoest gym ever. But anyway.
It was
fit
a gym.
Fit for less. It was terrible.
So, on to hockey. So this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the Monahan trade and some of the trickle-down effect that it's caused. So why don't we just get started, first of all, with the asset management shown. Well, you know what? We'll just do the trade first. Monahan traded to Winnipeg for a first and a conditional third if the Jets win a Stanley Cup. So essentially,
a first.
So two firsts that he got for Monahan. Personally, I think that's a good trade for both sides.
Well, I know we talked on the show that we thought he could get a first plus. I still believe they could have, but I understand the first. I'm not really upset that it was just a first. Like, you essentially get two firsts for one player. And really, you brought it up at the beginning. When it comes to asset management, if you can get two firsts for one player, a first for getting the player, and then a first for getting rid of the player, you've done something correct. Especially when that guy was injured almost one whole year, the year you thought you were going to get your first, and you still got the first for him the next year. So, I watched the presser with Hughes from his home, his kitchen, I think he was in. And he basically said, I think it was Arpin asked him, why not wait to the trade deadline? Closer to the trade deadline, it might be worth more. I'm not sure if it was Arpin or Stu Cowell, one or the other. And he basically said, hey, you know, we learned from last year that with the injuries to Edmondson and all these guys that, you know, kind of we weren't able to trade him because he was injured most of the year, all this stuff. And not saying that Monahan has an injury, but they didn't want to wait and risk the, you know, risk. Because, I mean, there's still 4 weeks left until the trade deadline. He didn't want to risk anything, and he had I took that as just really wanted the first anyway. So we got what we wanted, and we weren't too worried about the plus-plus because maybe no one was offering a very high prospect. Maybe no one was, you know, maybe first was the highest offer they were getting, and maybe with a bidding war coming down. And then he also said something about the market. Like, we don't know who else is going to put another center up for grabs or another, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, our center loses value. So
he did talk about how the market was shifting, and he was expecting a major shift in the market. So why not take you set a value for the player in a trade. Someone
Yeah.
offers it to you, take it. So why
Yeah,
not?
and that's what he did. So I'm happy with it. I can see the argument for waiting and possibly getting more. I get it. But I you know what? I would rather trade him now and risk him not getting injured. I think the trade deadline should be around this time of year anyway, and not pushed to, I think it should be earlier in the season anyway. But that's just me. Maybe not this early, but maybe in a week or two. And they got what they wanted. So now they have that first that they could do whatever the hell they want with. Now they have
Yeah,
four
and
first round picks in the next two drafts.
exactly. He's gotten so he Hughes is known for being a guy who sets a price for a player and holds on until that until he gets it. And you talked about risk, like you talked about last trade deadline. Jesus, they had nobody they could trade because
Well,
everybody was hurt.
we talked about it last year. We talked about Edmondson. We talked about Monahan. We talked about who else was available. There was a possibility that they could have got three firsts in last year's trade deadline, and they got zero because they couldn't retrade anyone. So,
You're all
because they were
broken.
all hurt. So, and this year he got what he wanted from Monahan. I think the key to what he said too was about retention. He was asked about retention, and maybe he could have got more if he retained on Monahan. And he basically said, "I didn't want to do that because I wanted that retention slot available for somebody else if I needed to move someone a little bit."
More
He
expensive.
never really came out and said it, but I'm assuming
No.
someone a little bit more expensive, a little bit harder to move, if I need to use that. And
Yeah, like say an Allen or a Savard.
Allen or Savard. Now he did mention, you brought it up in your article that I think it was Lavoie mentioned that he said that Allen wasn't really on the table, that he wasn't had no plans to move Savard, not Allen, sorry, Savard. And I mean, we've heard that before, but I mean, just be, if someone comes in and says, "I'm going to give you a first in this prospect for that defenseman," you're going to go, "Yeah, okay." I'm not going
Yep.
to turn
Oh,
that
you want me
down.
to take half the salary? Done.
Yeah, and that's what I think. Personally, my first thought was Jake Allen. So, although I've been a big advocate saying he's not going to take another multi-year retention because it's going to hold him over a barrel for next year, but then when I look at it, you still got one left for next year. So, and with all the people they have coming off the board next year that are going to become UFAs next year, then, I think they'll be okay.
And at the end of next season is when things are really going to start brewing for his plan anyway. So, this
Yeah.
year and next year, retaining for the rest of this season and all of next season shouldn't be a big problem for one or two players.
No. I mean, the end of next season, you have Armia coming off the books, Jake Evans, Pezzetta, Condotta, Jordan, or sorry, David Savard, Kovacevic, Jake Allen. Dvorak, oh no, Dvorak's 25, 26. Sorry. Oh yeah, that's next year. Yeah, so yeah, they have a lot. They have a lot of guys coming off the books.
They do, yeah, and it's going to clear up a lot of cap space, so they could make some moves. They could sign guys. They can extend guys. It's basically cleaning up the last little bit of the Bergevin era contracts, with the exception of one or two.
Well, yeah, the only
Gallagher's still there.
Gallagher and Anderson
Yeah.
are still there, 27, 28. But other than that, that's it. That's it. That's the only, well, Carey Price. Oh, next season will be Carey, 25, 26 will be Carey Price's last season under contract.
So
So there's a
that's another
$10 million.
that I know people think that LTIR gives you the license to spend more, but it does hamper things a bit for them
Yeah.
too. It's not easy to manage. So getting rid of that altogether, that saves him a little bit of heartache and headache.
You
It makes
gotta
things
be
easier.
under the cap with that 10 million before you can use that 10 million. So people don't seem to understand that. You still have to be under the cap. You can't just go, "Well, I have $85,000 cap plus 10, $85 million in cap plus 10 million." No, you don't. you have 85 million in cap,
Yeah.
but this
So
gives you a little bit.
there's a lot of shifting there, but so that makes things a little easier down the line. But for right now, things are a little bit harder, because of all the money. But it's so the on ice stuff too.
Wow. So we have no centers. Nick Suzuki's going to play 60 minutes a game and play on every line.
Oh, Jake Evans is there.
Okay, sorry. He's going to play
Three lines.
52 minutes and play on three lines. Well, they made their moves. Like they
Yeah.
you knew either Condotta, Stevens, or Anderson were going to get a call up. I personally thought it was going to be Stevenson, but it was Condotta. Or Stevens, not Stevenson, but which I like better because I thought I liked Condotta when, in the one or two games that he played. But then they also went out and signed to an NHL contact, Brendan Gignac, and he was leading a Laval. He's a point per game player in Laval. He was
Yeah.
leading them in scoring, and now he's going to get his chance to see what he can do in the NHL. He does have an NHL game under his belt with the New Jersey Devils, the team that drafted him in
So he's
2016.
about to double his NHL games
So
played.
yeah, he's going to do that. So there won't shouldn't be any solo skate at the first of the game because he's technically not a rookie in his first game. But
True.
you never know; they might do that. But it'll be interesting to see how well he does. I would assume he's going to be their third line center.
I think he's going to have to be. He was signed to this deal to fill a center spot, but he has earned a call up by the way he's played. Not that he's going to be a world beater or he's going to do anything to really keep the Canadiens from sliding down the standings, but he's going to get an NHL chance. He plays with speed. He's a monster on the forecheck. He just nonstop attack. So they've got that at least with him. So that's more of a third line kind of role. And then you got Kandata on the fourth line, Evans on the second. I mean, you look at that center depth without Monahan, and it is painful.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be if you had Doc and Dvorak not injured, because,
True.
so I mean, but you knew Monahan was getting traded regardless. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure Ken Hughes was like, well, I'm going to have to trade him. We're going to have to. I read online some people saying, oh, well, they're just telling the team that they threw in the towel, they gave up. But I'm pretty sure the team understood that Monahan was on a show me contract and that if they could trade him to a contender, they will. I don't think that was a huge secret. You can't help it if two of your, top nine centers got injured before, for the season. So basically, all they can really do now is hope. Gignac.
Yeah.
Hey, Gignac could be the next RHP from last year where he comes out like a fireball and does whatever. I doubt it, but I'm just saying, you never know what he's going to do. You never. He earned the call up, he earned the contract. Let's go out and see what he can do. He's not going to be a difference maker. He's not going to,
No. No,
the
this is gonna
Canadian.
this lineup is gonna slide down the standings. Right now they sit I think they're drafting seventh or eighth.
Yeah, seven.
So by the end of the year, it's going to be closer to top five, if not top five.
I mean, Alex Newhook's going to be back fairly soon, not right away after the but they believe
No, maybe
soon.
another week because he is skating without, he is skating now. It's full contact. He's able to practice with the team the whole nine yards, but that's going to take a little bit of time for him to get back up to game shape.
So he'll probably pop in and be. I mean, they did not, even with the call up, even with Gignac, and although I don't know if Gignac is officially to the roster because cap friendly
Yeah,
showing
he
the
is.
roster at 22 of 23 with Gignac's contract still pending registration. So,
Well, Gignac signing the deal means he's in the NHL. They have to put him on
yeah,
waivers to send him
no, I
back.
get that. I'm just saying the way Cap Friendly shown it is maybe the NHL just didn't approve the didn't go through the NHL quite yet to make it official. That's all I'm saying. He will be
Yeah,
in
because it
Montreal.
says
He clapped
registration pending.
pending, yeah. So I think that's just an NHL head office thing. And
The snowstorm in the Northeast is causing some slowdowns.
Windsor is really the true NHL headquarters. Nobody knows that. You just heard that from us.
That's right. So I don't think the lineup is going to be looking all that great to start off, because
No.
not only is the center depth damaged, now the special teams are also damaged. Who's going to replace him on the power play? St. Louis doesn't know yet, but I feel like Slafkovský could be a good fit in that bumper spot.
He could be, but I think the question is who's going to be the other player? It's probably going to be Anderson, to everyone's dismay. But
More than
who
likely.
else are you going to put there? I mean, I would say when Newhook comes back, he'll probably go in there. And I agree. I think Slafkovský could be perfect for that bumper position where Monahan was, because he has a great pass. My next question is Slafkovský going to get moved back to the first line, or is he going to stay on the second line to play with Evans and Armia? And
That's a
if he
tough
does,
call.
and if he doesn't get moved to that first line, is this going to hurt his momentum that he had going into the All-Star break? Because even when he got moved to the second line, that second line all of a sudden became a pretty good dog goddamn line, with Armia, Slafkovský, and Monahan on it. And I'm not going to say that was all Slafkovský, but it wasn't as good with whoever else they had on their wing. So,
No, they're a one line team now without Monahan, without Doc, without Dvorak, without Newhook. They're a one line team. Newhook comes back.
still a one
They're
line.
still a one line team. It's the center depth that's the cause of the issues here. So, yeah, the rest of the season gonna suck. People are gonna get pissed off and cry and bitch and moan. Oh my God, we suck again. Well, yeah. You're still rebuilding. This is what happens when you got some injuries on top of a lack of depth.
And not just that, I mean, there was a lot of people, I mean, especially on Facebook, but Facebook's the worst for social media when it comes to
Ooh.
stuff. They wanted Monahan signed. You can't get rid of Monahan. He's blah, 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 blah. But there was no way they were signing Monahan, re-signing Monahan. Hughes said himself, the future wasn't clear enough to for them to offer him a contract. And I think that was saying both ways. Like, we can't tell him we're going to be a contender at this point, and we don't know where we're going to start turning the corner. So signing him now, he may not even be part of the team by the time we're ready to move forward.
Well, I
And
mean, in French, he said that he couldn't offer him the contract that he wanted, so that who that Monahan wanted, couldn't offer him the money or the term. So it's better to just trade him anyway.
And I think that's, you know, like Monahan's like, hey, I'm pretty sure Monahan's looking for a 4.5 above for 3 to 4. He's looking for probably his big final contract, multi-year. It won't be the 6 million he was getting, but, you know, 4.5 to 5.5 probably. And Montreal's like, no, we're not doing that. Not at your age and where our team is right
No.
now. Like, I think it was more of not what he wanted. And basically, I mean, they probably said, we'll sign you for another 1 year contract. Right,
He didn't want that.
but he didn't want that, so, and I don't
So,
blame
yeah. And there's nothing saying he can't come back in the summer, but more than likely, for the same reasons they didn't sign him now, they won't sign him then. But
unless he comes
this.
back to him and says, listen, I really want to play for you guys, I'll, you know, what can I sign for? And I don't see that happen.
No, I don't see him going that route. Whoever, like with Winnipeg now, if he does well there, I can see him signing that 3-year deal, whatever he wanted. So he's a
Yeah,
good fit there.
it's possible. He is. He's a good fit there. I mean, they don't really have a. I don't really think they have a second line center right now.
Not really. But now with
Like
him
that.
there, they have a legitimate second line center.
Yeah.
But what
I'll
this
be honest,
points.
Oh, go ahead. Go
What?
ahead. Finish your thought, and I'll say mine.
Well, what this points out to me is that Hughes is getting a reputation around the league as someone who treats players right, because he's doing right by the player and sticking to his word. Like, it's not a you want loyalty by a dog era anymore. It's I'm going to tell you what I want to do. You tell me what you want to do. If it jives, we'll do it. If not, hey, look, this is what I want to do. This is what we're going to do.
Well, he did it with Jeff Petrie twice.
Yeah, twice.
He did it with Monahan. That's pretty much it, I would say. But both of those players, he said he would do his best to get him to a, like Petrie went out of Montreal because he didn't like the way the COVID stuff was going on in Quebec.
Yeah, his family
wanted to
wasn't
go back
happy there.
To the States. He got one at Detroit, but he got him to, I believe, Pittsburgh is who he traded him to for Matheson. And then he brought him back to Montreal to get him to Detroit. So, you know, he stays by his word to the player, but I don't think he says, I'll do put you to where you want. I think he says, I'll do my best to get you where you want to be, but I'm not going to guarantee it's going to be, you know, the greatest, but, you know, we'll
and
get you
in that,
close to what you want.
In that Petrie, second Petrie trade, he could have probably traded Petrie as a standalone to somebody else altogether and probably gotten better than what he did, instead of, you know, eating half his cap and taking on a guy he ends up losing on waivers. He might have been able to get something more. But by taking less and taking a hit, he stuck by his word. And players see this. The world, it's a small world up there among the players in the NHL, and word travels fast. Everybody's looking around at this and they're saying, okay, well, this is a management team that treats us right when we're there. They treat us like adults and they include us in the decision-making. So that's a place I want to go to. And now Montreal is going to become more of a destination in time because of this. And it'll be in a time frame that fits their rebuild as well.
Well, definitely. Like now, you know, we always argued free agents don't want to come to Montreal because of this, 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 and this. And it's like you said, you know, the loyalty thing is up. But I just to go back to the Bergevin thing, Ken Hughes got more first round picks for one player than Bergevin did in 10 years.
True.
Because Bergevin never traded for or gave away. The only first round pick he traded got. He didn't even trade for it. He got it in the Kotkaniemi sign. So it wasn't even a trade. Yeah. It was just he automatically got it because he didn't match a contract. And then he immediately traded that away for Christian Dvorak. So, I mean, and so far since Ken Hughes has been there for 2.5 years, he's gotten 3 first round picks. So in 10 years, Bergevin got one only because it was given to him, not because he went out and got it. And then Ken Hughes went out and got 3 first in 2.5 years. And I don't know. I just find that humorous.
Well, in comparing the two again, in their styles of management, Hughes is very calculated. You can tell he has a plan laid out and he's sticking to it. Whereas with Bergevin, you knew he had a plan, but that plan would change based on whatever happened right then at that moment.
Ken Hughes is, and this is why you can honestly say the rebuild started with Hughes, because Bergevin was still in, we have this piece and this piece. I just need to throw a couple of extra pieces in here and we're good to go. Whereas Ken Hughes is like, okay, well, I got these players and I'm trying to get as many young prospects and young players that I can get, because this team is going to be ready in, say, 5 years from when he took over, and we're in year two, right? And I think if they're looking at maybe 26, 27, 27, 28 as the, okay, we got to start playing for the playoffs now. Personally, like, there's Matt Bedard, Scotia-Canadian, had this big thread going on there that he thinks they're one or two players away from being a playoff team next year. A healthy team, and if Hudson hits his ceiling, as soon as he comes in, if they draft a great player and they come over right away and they get infused in the lineup right away and become the player, yes, he's not wrong. But if you sit back and go, okay, let's stick reality into this and let's not put our expectations way up here, but not way down here either. We're probably 2 to 3 years away from saying this team should be pushing for the playoffs.
Well, by what he is saying, yes, they could push for a playoff spot. If there's a lot of what ifs in there.
Yeah.
And do you want to build a team on what ifs, or do you want to build a team which takes a little bit more time to become, yes, this is a playoff team, guaranteed, no holds barred. That's what he's aiming for. And then he's going to have to build up on that so that they can actually win some playoff series. I love Matt, but pushing for the playoffs right now and giving up assets just so you can try for a playoff spot, I think you're reaching too small. You got to try and reach a little higher. You want a cup contender, not just a team that might make the playoffs.
Now, I don't think Matt was suggesting next year they trade off assets to
make the team
better. I think what he was saying was with this team makeup, and really, if this team stayed healthy, I think they're battling for like 13th, 14th, 15th spot to draft anyway with a healthy team. Maybe after the trade deadline, they might drop a little bit to like 11 or 12 or something similar like that. I mean, this year's been a weird year because at 80 points last year, they would have been out of the top 10, I think, if I go back and look at the standings. But this year, they're not going to be anywhere near. Even if they still finish with the 80 points that we said they probably finish with, they're not going to be anywhere near out of the top 10. I don't think they're ever going to come out of the top 10, like, unless they go on a huge winning streak. It's been a really weird year. Like, they're 6 points from drafted fifth, and they're 9 points from making a playoff. So
it's very tight because of the parity.
Yeah, and you can – now that Monahan's gone and we're going with Evans as our second-line center, you can forget about catching up the 9 points. Now you have to see, is this team still going to be good enough to maintain that seventh spot, or are we going to see 3-4 losses in a row before a win? And then, you know, because they haven't won, I don't think, 3 games in a row this season. But they haven't really – I don't think they've lost much more than 3 games in a row this season either.
No,
so,
no they haven't.
So it's been that type of year for them. And that's, I mean, I still think they're going to finish with around 80 points, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's a little under.
Basically what we're looking at is a team that has improved over last season, individual players who have improved their play over last season. Then you sell, you get more assets, futures. Granted, they're just lottery tickets, these first round picks, especially late ones, but he's got them, and they're going to drop down in the standings to get a much higher draft pick with their own pick. So you have a top 10 pick, you have assets to trade for whatever it is you want to get, you have players improving. While the team is lower in the standings and it doesn't look like it, this is a step ahead from last season.
Yeah. This is exactly how we actually planned the season out at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it is.
By saying, yes, we want them to finish in a good draft position, but it's still going to be a successful season as long as player A, B, C, and D improve. The team overall improves. I'm not trying to toot the Habs Unfiltered guys' own horns, but we pretty much said this at the beginning of the season. We said they were going to, we think for this to be a successful year, they don't have to win or make the playoffs or do whatever. Individually, players had to be better. And that's exactly what's happened. The team had to get more points, which is exactly what's going to happen. We've just been fortunate that the parity in the league has forced us so that we could play 500 and still draft in the top 10. right?
That is the weird part of this season, for sure.
And another weird part of the season is the injuries, because if you look at the injuries last year, if everyone stayed healthy, I don't think you were drafting top five.
No.
And this year, if everyone stays healthy, I don't think you're drafting top 10. So, I mean, the injuries are kind of a blessing and not a blessing, I guess, depending on how you want to look at the season.
True.
I think if they would have drafted someone last year, like Leonard, or who else was available? That guy there in Buffalo that went
Ford.
12th. Was the Ford? That's what I'm talking. Yeah, Leonard or
Wood. It doesn't matter.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. In last year's draft, one of the Fords that, you know, Mishkov or whoever, didn't matter who they would have drafted. I don't think people would have cared. They wouldn't be looking at. We're going to run out of time.
Yeah. So why don't we just we'll
Yeah.
end it here. We'll do some commercials and we'll come back with more from the wonderful world of Trek. And welcome back to Habs Unfiltered, aka the wonderful world of Treg Wilson. So we were talking about before the break, we're talking about where the Canadians had drafted last year, what would have happened had they drafted a forward. Where are
Yeah,
we at?
all I'm saying is that, you know, you have this separation of fans who were very upset that they didn't draft a forward, some a certain forward, because there's a group of fans who think if we don't get this guy or this guy, everything's gone to shit, which I'm not a big fan of, because you don't know how that person's going to do either. I mean, the odds are if you could, anyway. So I think if they would have drafted, say, this forward in last year's group, I don't think there would be such a need for these fans to want the Habs to draft so low this year. You know what I mean? Because this year is going to be a highly defensive first round. I think there's three suspected to go in the top five, but amongst those defensemen are very, very, very good forwards, like Serabini and Demidov and Lindstrom and Ginla and Catton and all these guys. So I think now that these guys are available, but they may not be available at 7, 8, 9, or 10. This is where people are like, oh, they got to finish in the bottom five because we need one of these guys to be drafted. Now, I'll go on record now saying I want them to draft either Demidov or Lindstrom. And I mean, if they go with a defenseman, then I have no idea what they're doing in the draft. So,
yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to go for a defenseman, though. I mean, I don't, when you have Cole Iserman, you have Lindstrom, you have Demidov,
I like
and that's
Demidov.
what you're looking for.
I think
you're looking for
Demidov's going to
scoring.
be, I think he's going to be better than Michkov in the NHL, but that's just me.
Yeah.
I'll get attacked on Facebook in 3, 2, 1. Or not Facebook, X in 3, 2, 1.
Everywhere. Everywhere.
But I think he's an all-around better player. And he's a better skater, and he's a bigger player, and he plays better defense, and he's just an all-around better player in my mind.
Now, yeah, and Michkov relies on people to set the table for him, whereas Demidov, he controls the game himself. He can set the pace, slow it down, speed it up. So yeah, I can see him being the better player. As a younger player, he made a better team. He had more time. He just seems to have a little bit more drive. I don't know if that's the right word, but he's willing to work on his deficiencies more. It's not all about scoring a goal for him.
I agree. I mean, I don't think Michkov's as greedy as people think he is. I just think
No.
I think he's just that type of player that this is what I am, and this is what you're going to get.
He's a much more talented Hoffman.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I think Michkov will have a nice career in the NHL. I just don't think he's the generational talent that people have been throwing around there.
No. No.
And that's where I think, like, people think I hate him and blah, blah, blah. I didn't want him drafted by Montreal. I wanted, and I'm on record saying I wanted Leonard. I didn't want Reinbacher either. So anyone who says I don't like Mitchkov because, oh, I'm happy with Reinbacher, I didn't want Reinbacher, but now that he's drafted, there's no point in me pouting about it. Now I just have to go, okay, well, I hope this guy can be what we hope he can be. End of conversation. Because guess what? I cannot change the draft pick. Me as a fan cannot sit there and go, oh, we got Reinbacher. Well, I better do my best to art to bitch about it online so they get rid of that guy. It's not going to happen.
I
So
call it the Zadina effect.
I'm just going to sit there and go, okay, we got Reinbacher. It's not who I wanted, but let's see who this Reinbacher guy is, which I already kind of knew because I've seen him at the World Junior Championships. I've talked to him, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know what? He's not a bad pick. He is the best defenseman in that draft. He is probably going to be the best defenseman for the next two drafts, even though the next draft's a heavy defensive draft. It was not a bad pick. Not the pick I wanted, but not a bad pick. So it's not me
Yeah.
as what quote unquote sucking Hughes's dick. It's just me being realistic and knowing I can't change anything.
Like I said, it's the Zadina effect. The draft is the team is ruined to me if they draft a guy that I don't want. And
Yeah.
the same people who are crying out loud about Mitchkov not being picked are the same ones that say, don't draft for need, draft best player available. Now,
Yeah.
that's where the argument lies. Is Mitchkov the better player than Reinbacher? And that time will tell. In a couple of years, we'll know, but more than likely.
How do you care? Or not care, but how do you pick compare them? Like Mitchkov is a offensive only forward. Like he and Reinbacher's a two-way defenseman. Like you, what metrics are going to use to compare them? They're two totally different styles, two totally different positions, two totally different players. Like you can't, I don't know.
Well,
Do you compare by saying, I don't know. I don't understand. Maybe analytical people help me on this one, because how do you compare a defenseman? How do you compare a two-way defenseman to a highly offensive forward and say which one's better?
for me, the comparison would be impact to the game. How does that player impact the game? How do they impact the team's game plan? Do they fit? Do they not? So
And I would
Would
agree with all
Mitchkov,
that.
yeah, but would Mitchkov fit with Montreal?
No, because he's going to be a under 6 foot forward who's going to be playing on the top six with four other under 6 foot forwards.
Would have been our Peregrine.
We would have had the Smurf line back again with Suzuki,
Exactly, with
Caulfield,
Peregrine.
and yeah, or with Burré, Petrov, and Saku Koivu. It would have been the same goddamn thing. Like, don't get me wrong, Mitchkov has all kinds of talent. And I just, my issue with, if he was a better skater, I think I would think more highly of him. That's all.
So moving away from the same
Yeah,
old tired
let's get away from this
argument,
thing.
the asset management by Hughes. I mean, we touched on it a little bit in the first half. This like it all shows that his plan is he's got a plan in place. He's sticking to it. He's got prices. He stays to those. And you can tell that you kind of know what he's doing. Like when he talks to the press after he does something like trade Monahan, you understand what he's doing. He explains it all to you. He doesn't provide you the exact details, but he tells you pretty much everything a GM could publicly.
I'm pretty sure that Hughes wants to use the extra first round draft pick or the extra two first round draft picks he has for the next 2 years, some of his young defensemen that he has in his system to go out and get a star player through a trade. I honestly think he wants to do that. I honestly think he thinks he has the assets that he can go out and get. I don't even know who I couldn't even name who right now, but he can go out and get the assets and say, I have this, 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 and this. I want him. Right? and he goes off and does it. And I think it's going to be an RFA type player that he's going to go after, a young RFA that maybe a team is like, we want to sign him, but we don't want to sign him this big contract. He's going to go out and say, I'll sign him that contract, but I have all this. You know, and
you look,
I
look
that's
around the
my
league.
Opinion.
And I agree. I agree. That's where I think he's going.
Yeah.
And you look around the league and you see teams that have multiple young players that they have to make decisions on. Do I keep this guy? Do I pay him? Do I trade this guy to get something? And that's where he's going to just swoop in with his cap space and his bucket load of futures assets.
Yeah, and he's going to sit there and say, you guys are on the other side of winning a cup. You guys are turning this way. I know you have that star young player, but he's not going to want to be there when you're ready to contend. I'll take him because I'm close to, you know, he's going to be my key to getting where I want to go. And this first round pick, and this top four defenseman, he's going to be your key to pushing your comeback faster.
And that's kind of why
I think that's what.
Yeah. And that's why there's that talk of Trevor Zegras. That's why it just sounds. Fans see that, they hear that rumor, and it makes sense because of that reason. He's his age, his skill set, you know, he's flashy. He may not be a point per game player, but you know, he gets fans out of their seats, and that's what Montrealers love.
And then you also got to look at this draft. And I'm not saying this could happen, but say Montreal's drafting fifth. Let's say they draft fifth. Whether they win it by lotto or that's where they finish and that's where the lotto finishes. And say Winnipeg gets put out in the first round. So now they have a 20 to 21, whatever they're there, 20 or 21 or wherever the hell they stand. So now he's looking at it and goes, he knows the team who's drafting first really wants a defenseman. Hey, I'll give you 5 and 21 for the first overall pick. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but in this year's draft, if this year's draft, that's not out of the question. It's not like last year where Bedard was not being moved for 47 first round picks. This one, so I'm not saying Celebrini's not going to be, he's going to be a star player in the NHL, but he's not generational. He's not, nothing tells me he's going to be Bedard type. Yeah, does that make any sense?
No.
He's
going to be a first line player, but
he's going to be a first line
one?
Player. He's probably going to be a point per game player. He's probably going to be everything you want. I just don't know if he's going to be like a Draisaitl or McDavid or Kucherov or anything like that. So,
which makes it plausible that someone would be willing to trade it.
So if you're, I'm trying to think who could be down there that would want a defenseman. But if you're one of the teams and you win first and you're like, oh shit, we really want a defenseman and we're going to look really stupid if we draft a defenseman in this draft first with Cerbini there. You know what, Hughes? Hey, why don't you draft fifth and 21st and we'll take the first pick. I would be shocked if that happened, but it's not out of the realm of question.
No, it wouldn't. So it could happen. I mean, Montreal has enough assets to move up, you know, both firsts, a young defenseman, that would be enough to move up four spots, I think. Celebrini's clearly the first overall pick this year. He's pulled himself away from the rest of the pack. So it's not going to be a surprise who gets picked. It's the surprise would be whether or not the pick is kept by the team that has it. And I don't think it's, I think it's been a while since the number one's been traded away. It's been a long time.
I don't remember if I know the Sedins were first overall. They were two,
three,
or three
four.
Or three, four. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's tough.
It's been a long time since someone's traded a first overall.
Yeah.
So is it plausible? Yeah. Is it going to happen?
Probably
not.
Not. But they could go up to second or third. They could
exactly.
You know, I mean, it all depends on if they think the guy they want's going to be where they're drafting. And I have a sneaky suspicion, and I've been to a lot of drafts, that teams kind of know who's drafting who. And like, I know it's all kept a secret, everyone's shocked, but I have a feeling that teams kind of know who's drafting who, and like, I think
Yeah,
they all know
and
who's being drafted.
who knows? Maybe they could trade some assets for a second top 10 pick. Like Arizona is a team that's trying to move their way up. They have a top 10 pick. So Montreal packages a defenseman and Winnipeg's first, and there you go.
Or maybe it's a matter of a Doc trade. Hey, like something
Yeah.
like Kirby Doc. Hey, we want that player. We'll give you Winnipeg's pick plus Jordan Harris or Barron or Jack Eye or, and we could segue into you were talking about that before, someone like that in order to get that player that we want.
And like you said, that brings us to the next step. Is Jack Eye a cornerstone piece of this team? Because his name's in the rumor mill again, and there's talk of him being used as trade bait, just as we've been talking about. So do you see him as a core piece, or do you see him as a trade asset?
So I'm a bit biased here, as you know, because I'm a huge Jack Eye fan.
Never heard you say anything
But
about him before.
I actually have a shirt that says Jack Eye with a X on. Anyway, cornerstone, I wouldn't say, but I don't think he's trade bait either. I don't think they want to move away from him now. Here's the thing. I think the only two young defensemen that are secured on this team right now is Gooley and Struble. And
Gooley for sure. Gooley for
I think
sure.
Struble, just because of the way he's played since he's been called up, I don't think they're gonna be too quick to flip him. If you know what I mean. I think they want to see a full they would rather see a full season of him. All right, let me reframe that. Gooley is the only young defenseman that will not be moved in a trade. Right.
True.
I think if they're going to move defensemen, it's going to be either Harris or Barron or maybe even both, because Lane Hutson's going to be coming in, and I don't think he I would not be shocked if Lane Hutson starts the season next season in Laval. I wouldn't be shocked. It
Nope.
all depends on how well he plays this season when he gets to Montreal. Logan Mailloux is going to, I think, get a shot at Montreal come the end of the season to see how well he plays in the NHL.
Probably.
I think it's going to be near the end of the season, just to see, give him a few games to see what he has. And then you have Reinbacher, who I wouldn't be surprised at the end of Colton's season, he comes over and gets a look-see in the NHL to see where he's at. So it all going to depend on whether or not Hutson, Reinbacher, and Mailloux are all ready to play in the NHL next season. And I'm willing to bet
True.
not all of them will be. So there's three. Then you got Gooley, so that's four. And you have Struble and Jack Eye.
Matheson.
That's six. And you have Matheson. But I think Matheson's the key here.
Yeah.
Matheson, if Hutson comes in and he's the firecracker we all hope he would be right off the bat, Matheson is gone by the trade deadline next season. Guaranteed.
And
Right?
he would be able to fetch a pretty good return as
And
well.
he'll fetch a pretty good return. And I think, a matter of fact, I wrote an article for the Hockey Writer Substack. It's a paid article, so you have to have a paid subscription to read the whole thing.
Is
I
it worth it?
mentioned,
Is it worth it?
of course it's worth it. I put my
It's the
blood, sweat,
hockey
and
writer,
tears
so yeah,
into it. It's the Hockey
that's
Writers.
right.
Where I said, if they're going to trade any defenseman at this deadline, it's going to be Savard, because you have to wait to see if Hutson's ready to step into Matheson's shoes or skates before you move Matheson on. And that's the way I look at it. Savard,
And you don't.
anyone right now can move into his spot. Struble, Gooley, you know what I mean? You have the players in spot that can move up there. So he's available. Although Ken Hughes said, like we said before, he has no plans to move Savard, so I don't know about that.
Right now, no. But I would say that this summer or next trade deadline, yes. Because for now, the value that Savard brings to the team is more than what he would get in a trade because he's able to kind of mentor the young guys. And that's what they really need. They need someone to stabilize those young guys, show them how to prepare games day in, day out, the mentality it takes to be a pro, all those things, all, you know, how to, you know, position yourself, do this, do that, a little bit of coaching on the bench from a, like a player coach kind of idea. And then by next trade deadline, after they've absorbed everything they can from him, then you can trade him for whatever assets you can get for him.
Plus he's a UFA, so he's going to be a rental. You're probably going to get a first and something for him because for some reason, rental big ass playoff defensemen are worth everything you have in your list. Yeah, so that could happen. Yeah, I can see that. I don't see an offseason move for Savard unless they really think Reinbacher or Mayhew is going to step in or Barron's going to step into that role. I don't think
someone's
Barron's
willing
there
to pay a price for him.
Yeah. And even this trade deadline, if someone comes up to Ken Hughes at this trade deadline and says, I got a first and a solid prospect for Savard, I don't see him saying no.
Third might we'll get see. It done.
A third?
Yeah.
Not the trade deadline. Maybe in the offseason. I mean, it's funny because if you look at Edmondson, if he was healthy, he would have fetched a first round pick at the trade deadline. However, in the offseason, the best you could get was a seventh round pick.
A fifth
round pick, yeah. So it's really, that's what I'm talking about when it comes to defensemen like that. So
because they want that guy, that the teams that are looking to get and win that cup, they want that big, heavy defenseman to punish the other team because playoff hockey and regular season hockey, two
different
very
things.
Different beasts.
Yeah.
Which brings me back to Jack Eye, who has the mobility, but also has that size, that grit, and that mean streak where he would be a really good playoff player.
Jack Eye is your perfect bottom pairing defenseman. He's your perfect because he can also slot into the top four. If you need him to be, the way I look at Montreal now is they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 top four defensemen. You have Gouley, young guys, Gouley, Barron, top four should be top four. I should let me rephrase that. You have Barron, Gouley, Mayhew, Hudson, and who am I missing? Barry, Gouley, Mayhew, Hudson, and
Reinbacher.
Reinbacher. That's five, right?
Yep.
Then you have Struble and Jack Eye, who could also play top 4 minutes, but I guess they're both left. But if you put them two on your bottom pairing, and you got to, no one's going to want to play against that bottom pairing.
No,
right?
that's a very physical bottom pair. And that's why I'm thinking, that's why teams would want him. So, Is he a core player? I don't think he's core, but he's one of those complementary pieces that you need to win.
I think Jack Eye right now is one of those hockey players that would have to take a really rich, rich, rich offer.
Yeah.
Like an overpay for them to move Jack Eye at this moment in time.
Because what he brings to the team is fairly unique. He's a huge body. He's physical. He's mobile. He has underrated offensive abilities. We saw it in Laval.
Yeah.
And before he got hurt last season, he was leading the league in rookie defenseman scoring. So it's not like he's not putting up 100 points, but like a 25, 30 point third pairing guy is not out of the question either.
There's a reason they sent him to Laval to work on his defense because if he's going to be their bottom pairing defenseman, he's the guy that's going to play the heavy minutes when they need him to defend. And if he can't do that, then he's not for them. And I think that's why, because they see everything else in him. I mean, the guy quarterbacks the second power play when he's in Montreal. So over Gouley, Barron, and friggin' Harris. So that tells you something there. You know what I mean? So
he does have that shot. That lightning shot, the breakthrough, the net shot.
Yeah. And it's usually on net, not into someone's shin pads when there's a guy wide open on the other side. So, I'm ready! Pass it! Oh, never mind. I think Slafkovský from now on should just do what Ovechkin does, just stand at the dot like you don't care what's going on in life and not even just sit stand there because he's probably not getting the pass in. Maybe he'll get the pass in.
Yeah, which is another reason to put Slafkovský in the bumper spot, because the puck's going to get there eventually.
Eventually. Yeah, because Suzuki or Caulfield or someone's going to give it to him to try to get themselves open so he can pass it back to them.
Or the puck bounces off a defender and it's just laying there in the slot anyway, so he just goes and grabs it.
And he makes a perfect screen because he's like 6'12" and 400 pounds. So,
Well,
but
yeah, but it's
but
that
go.
go ahead.
I was just saying, going back to Jack, I don't think he's cornerstone, but I don't think he's available, if that makes any sense whatsoever. I could see other defensemen going before him, like a Harris or a Barron or someone to that effect, going before Jack Eichel goes. If that tells you where I think he is on the depth chart.
Yeah, and you still got Kovacevic there, who's more than likely going to be going by the wayside as well. I mean, he's a good filler for now. He's a solid NHL defenseman. You might be able to trade him for something, and that's fine. But in the
He could
long
be a
run, he's
guy
not
traded
planning
at
to
this
be there.
deadline. He could be a guy that goes at this
He could
deadline. You're
be.
not going to fetch a first or anything for him, but you could fetch maybe a second or a third for a guy like him. I'd say a third, probably not a second, but if
He's a
that's what you
big,
want.
solid, reliable third pairing defenseman who's right-handed, and he makes less than $800,000 a year.
And he, you never hear his name, which is a good thing when you're a bottom pairing defenseman.
Except this year, because he's scoring all the goals.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that came out of nowhere. But
Right? Perfect time to trade him.
he gets 6 goals. He doubled his goal
Yeah.
total from last year. 6-2. He's going for the Cy Young.
Him and Armia.
What's Armia, 7-1?
Yeah.
But hey, speaking of Armia, I don't care what anyone says. Armia's having a hell of a year. And we talked about this on last show, and I'm going to bring it up again until he really starts sucking. But he's having a good year. Considering he's having a good year.
And he's another guy who's going to be in his final season next season on that contract. So maybe if he continues and he continues his play until the end of the season, the way he's playing now, he's not, he's clearly a bottom six, but who knows? Maybe by deadline, a team's willing to pay something to take him on, because there's going to be teams that need that big, heavy puck possession type player for their fourth line, like Montreal had him as when they went to the cup final.
Or, and hear me out, he is one of the guys that they're trying to move at this deadline and using that retention for. I highly doubt it
It's
because
possible.
it's possible, but I don't think he gives the return that would make them want to keep a retention for 2 years, for this year
True.
and next. But get because with him, you got to think of the next 2 years. Same with Jake Allen. I think that's personally, I think it's for Jake Allen, but.
Yeah. Because there's more of a
So
market for Jake Allen right now,
there's
and it
more of a
solves the
market for
three
Jake Allen.
goalie issue, and yeah.
So yeah, Jake Allen gets moved. He goes, all right, I'll retain it. I'll still have it for next year with Petrie, but I still have one left over for next year. I think he'd rather more than one, but if he can move Allen and retain some of his salary to move him, he's probably going to do it.
And if you look forward to this, just this week, we're going to be able to see just how much the Canadians need some of these guys to really step up. They got the Capitals, they got the Stars, they got the Blues. These are three really good teams, especially the Stars.
Well, Kid Hughes said at his presser, they asked him who's going to pick up for Monahan. Like, who do you see filling in for Monahan? He said the entire team. He said the entire team got to pick up for a player like Monahan. And he's not wrong, because this guy played in all situations.
He did.
So that's him saying to the team that I believe in you. I believe you guys can step up and do it. You just have to go and do it now. And like the cool thing is there's no expectation. So like there's no one expects them to be making the playoffs. No one expects them to, well, no one reasonable, I should say. So everyone just hoped they would be better than they were last year, and I think they were. And they were, I mean, we're going back in a circle here, but I think they are better than last year, just based on the individual play of the players.
So that pretty much covers everything we were going to talk about for this episode. Do you have anything more?
No, not really. Like I say, the trade deadline's coming up. I still think Montreal has a move or two left in them. I think one's going to be a bigger one, Jake Allen. I'm looking at you. But I think there might be a couple smaller ones in there. I don't think there's going to be anything too serious. Now that Monahan's gone, don't look at their deadline being too crazy. But it's certainly not going to be as boring as it was last year. So, did they
No,
even make
well, I
any
mean,
moves last year?
not really. It was fairly anticlimactic just because of all the injuries.
Too
But
bad.
yeah. I can't remember off the top of my head how many moves he made, if any. I think it was a couple of minor ones with the players in the
Well,
minors.
they on March 3rd, which I think was the deadline,
Yeah.
they got Nathan Schneier for Frederick Allard. Oh, they got Frederick Allard for Nathan Schneier.
Oh yeah, and
And
they used Allard number as a call up because they needed a right-hand defenseman to fill in.
before that, on the 26th, they traded Dadonov for Denis Gurianov.
Oh, that's right. The
And
reclamation project that just never panned out.
yeah.
I forgot about that.
So that is
But Gurianov's still in the NHL, so maybe they did reclaim him or fix him, like the Leafs have promised to fix certain players that will go unnamed. But anyway, so do you have anything to add?
No, that's it. We talked about everything we're going to talk about. I just want to say, anyone in Nova Scotia, have a nice snowy day. Everything's pretty much closed tomorrow, so
Yeah.
get shoveled out and wait for next week's big 3-day storm that's supposed to come. So Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So
Yay, can't wait. So yeah, I'd like to echo your sentiments to everyone here on the East Coast. I hope you all have your storm chips and your storm beers. You're all snuggled in, everything's nice and safe and shoveled out. For those listening, I really, really want to thank you guys for tuning in again, sharing some of your thoughts with us online. The comments you guys make, some of them pretty funny, especially when you're chirping Treg. Not bad. Treg lives it though.
bench press 255, and then you can chirp
Man, you can almost press me.
me. Yeah, you're not as straight
Almost.
as a bar.
Just because that, I mean, hey. So for everyone listening, thank you very, very much for listening. We really appreciate your time with us. So again, thank you. And remember, if you're talking about it, so are we.
The podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first five episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. and Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.